last great extinction was the dinosaur. Scientists know of five mass extinctions that have occurred in the past. They now believe we are living through a sixth extinction, but it's not an asteroid or a flood causing this one. It's us. Elizabeth Colbert is a science writer for The New Yorker, and her new book is The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. Before we got to the next mass extinction, I asked her to go over the previous five.
The first one occurred about 440 million years ago. And at that point, interestingly enough, life was still almost exclusively in the oceans. So we really only had marine life at that point. And it was a devastating event that we think scientists think, was caused by a sudden glaciation whose source is not really understood very well at this point. And the third, the very, very worst of these, occurred about 250 million years ago. It's sometimes called the mother of mass extinctions. It's known as the end Permian extinction. And it probably came fairly close to wiping out multicellular life altogether, which is a very, very frightening prospect. And the most recent is the fifth, and the most famous and the most popular, if you will. And that was the extinction event that did in the dinosaurs, and also many, many other groups that unfortunately or fortunately get lesser billing than the dinosaurs, the pterosaurs, for example. And that there's a pretty broad scientific consensus that that was caused by an asteroid impact. So that's a sort of a short history of mass extinction.
What did life look like on the planet right after the at the end of the Permian extinction? What was on the planet?
Yeah, it looked pretty grim, I think. The oceans were really, really depleted. It was a very massive thing. Like 90% of all marine species went extinct at that time. It was probably a pretty, you know, geologically speaking, relatively short amount of time. The oceans were acidified. There's a very, unfortunately, a very frightening parallel to what we're doing by pouring a lot of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. A lot of that carbon dioxide ends up in the oceans, where it changes, turns into an acid. When CO2 dissolves in water, it forms an acid. So in the end Permian extinction, there was also a massive release of CO2. The chemistry of the oceans went completely haywire. The world got much, much warmer. One of the interesting things, animals to emerge from that extinction was an animal called, I believe it's Lystrosaurus, and he was sort of a pig-sized animal. He wasn't a dinosaur. He was pre-dinosaur. And he really dominated the Earth. That was the biggest creature on Earth for quite a while. And Lystrosaurus did extremely well. And people have scratched their heads and tried to figure out, okay, why did that particular species survive? And no one really has a good answer for that.
And then, Elizabeth Colbert, how do you think this sixth extinction is unfolding? What's the time frame for this sixth extinction?
You know, once again, if you're looking at it in geological terms, it will probably appear to be very, very quick. But in the case of looking at it as it is actually happening, you know, it will appear to unfold over many human lifetimes. How's that? So, you know, some people would say it really began, you know, all the way back when people, for example, first went into new parts of the world, modern humans who evolved in Africa. And when they went into, for example, Australia, people reached Australia 50,000 years ago, which is quite amazing because it's quite a long way away and it required traveling over open water to get there. But they arrived around 50,000 years ago and they found an incredible variety of fantastic creatures, huge marsupials, which are known as rhinoceros wombats, very large birds, bigger than any bird we have on the planet now, huge tortoises, sort of horned tortoises. And all those animals went extinct over the course of, let's say, a few thousand years, probably due to human hunting. And so while those humans were precipitating this event, they were, you know, doubtless unaware that it was going on because it was unfolding over the course of many human lifetimes. So that's sort of exactly the same thing. For us, we are watching animals go extinct. It will take, you know, many human lifetimes for the full effects to be felt. But once it's all of this period is compressed down into, you know, the layer of, you know, thickness basically of a cigarette paper, it will look very sudden. It may look as sudden as an asteroid impact.
You know, a mammoth tusk was discovered in Seattle's South Lake Union neighborhood last week, and they were digging an apartment building. And they were very happy to pull it up. The mammoth, it's interesting to imagine the mammoth wandering around these grassy marshes in between the ice sheets that had come over and then receded in this area. And now they've pulled it up. And you think, and people were very excited about it. Like, here's this amazing window onto another era. But as you mentioned in the book, we could blame the hunters, we could blame the technologists, or we could blame those of us who are holding the books as we're reading them, because we are all a part of this change that's happening.
Yes, one of the real points of the book that I hope comes through in the stories that I tell in the book is that one of the reasons people turn out to be dangerous to other species. It's not only our bad qualities, what we would, you know, sort of generally agree are our bad qualities, you know, greed or violence, say. It's actually that we're an extremely clever, imaginative, social species. We have huge societies. We pass on knowledge from one generation to the other. And this has allowed us to change the world in these really unprecedented ways that no other species has ever done. And so when I talk about, you know, what is actually turns out to be dangerous about people, you know, one of the things that turns out to be dangerous is this way in which we gain knowledge and then propagate knowledge through books, for example, which allows us to change the world on this global scale, which also turns out to be at a rate that many, many other organisms just can't keep up with.
And is that the crux of it, that this Holocene extinction, this human-caused extinction, is about rate, or is it about our numbers, or is it about how we have chosen to live on the planet?
Well, I guess I would say it's probably about all of those things and more. How's that? But if you're looking at, you know, what's happening on the planet from a perspective, let's say, of a bird or an amphibian, what is crucial to you is that the world is changing in ways that you as an organism are ill-equipped to adapt to, and that are way, way faster than evolution can allow you to adapt to. So, you know, is it the number of us? Is it the way that we have chosen to live, our level of consumption? It's all of those things. How's that? It's just from the perspective of other species, the really dangerous thing is change.
Life is extremely resilient, you quoted a scientist as saying, but not infinitely so.
That's really the lesson, you know, that we've learned by looking at the fossil record and looking at these mass extinctions of the past. Some of them, sometimes we scratch our heads. Scientists still scratch their heads and say, why was that event so devastating? But what we can learn from the record, or what we can infer from the record, is that there are certain times when something happens that to which life cannot adapt. So one of the scientists I quote in the book describes the history of life on the planet as long periods of boredom interrupted occasionally by panic. That's really what the history of life looks like. There are long periods when things are just sort of chugging along, and then something happens which causes the diversity of life on the planet to suddenly plummet.
And the something.
So life is the something, right? Life is very resilient, but then it can be stretched to the breaking point.
And in this case, we're the something.
Unfortunately, it turns out we are the something, yes.
Well, what happens to us in this world?
Yeah. I get asked that a lot. We do seem to care a lot about ourselves. And I guess I have a sort of, I can answer that two ways. And one way is that, you know, if you had to bet, well, what species will do well with humans on the planet, what species can coexist with humans, you know, humans would be way up there. So maybe, you know, humans, maybe as a species, will do fine. But the other way I could answer it is to say, what the record shows us, and why I chose to look at things in a very broad context of, you know, the last half billion years, is that when you get these moments of mass extinction, these moments of panic in life history, the rules seem to change. And we don't have very good, people have looked at the patterns of survivorship at these moments and tried to draw some lessons from them. And there don't seem to be very many rules that you can discern there. So one of the things we see is that very dominant groups of creatures, such as the dinosaurs, can be 100% wiped out as they were at the end of the Cretaceous. We don't really know exactly why. So that should be pretty sobering, you know, that when you, if you change the rules of the survival game, as we are changing them for other organisms, you don't know exactly where that's going to end.
But as you write, some people look at this and say, and I'm not talking about necessarily people who are looking at it in a religious context. They look at this and say, this is the natural way of planet, the ebb and flow, and people will go to other planets, will build things in space, will create, at the best scenario, we'll create floating cities and we'll have replicators like Star Trek so we won't have to be feeding off the planet. People do. There is a sense that people say, well, this is the way it's going to go and we can still be hopeful. What do you think?
Well, I think the idea, I guess, and, you know, I like sci-fi, you know, and I think those are really interesting ideas to think about. How's that? But the idea that a species that was given a planet, you know, that took, many, many, you know, several billion years for life on Earth to evolve to the point that we emerged and, you know, have all the oxygen we need, for example, which turns out to be just really, really crucial for people, and that we could sort of, you know, trash this planet and then just move off to another planet that has none of these life support systems and do just fine. I don't find that plausible. I'm going to be really frank. I think a species, you know, that can't take care of its home planet is probably not going to do that well on any other planet either. And I guess I feel like we should really be focusing on the home planet.
That was Elizabeth Colbert. Her book is The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. You can hear our full interview at our website, kuow.org.